You are listening to an edited version of Get Radio's Business Brunch, which airs every Sunday at 11 a.m. on DAB Digital Radio across Oxfordshire and online at getradio.co.uk. For copyright reasons, we cannot play the songs mentioned in the show. But for more info and Business Brunch related content, head over to getradio.co.uk.
Get Radio's Business Brunch with Ben Thompson, sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network. The friendly, no-pressure networking group for Oxfordshire's business people. Discover our membership packages to help you grow your business at obcn.co.uk.
Good morning, this is Get Radio and welcome to the Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson, owner of Thompson & Terry Recruitment. Every week during the show, I'm really fortunate to be able to share the stories, the expertise and the knowledge of business leaders, large and small, with you, the listener. And this week's a really exciting one. And on today's show, we're going to be talking about glove glue. And to do that, we're joined by Paul Sherritt, who is a local entrepreneur and created such a wonderful business, and is going to be sharing his story and some expertise and really the story behind glove glue over the next hour. This is the Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson. I look forward to welcoming Paul after this. Get Radio. Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. If you are just tuning in, we're joined by Paul Sherritt of Glove Glue. Welcome, Paul, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Ben. How are you doing?
So well, thank you. So well, and thank you for joining us this morning. For those who aren't familiar with you and indeed your business, please introduce yourself.
Yeah, Paul Sherritt. I am the founder and CEO of Glove Glue. So Glove Glue, basically our core product is a spray that you spray on your football goalkeeping gloves to make them grippy. And started the business way back in 2012 as a bit of a side gig. And in particular, in the last 3 or 4 years, we have seen some pretty crazy growth globally. We now sell one Glove Glue product every 150 seconds around the world and have basically created a category that didn't exist before we came along, which is goalkeeper glove care. So products to stop your gloves from smelling and keep them clean and make them grippy and fundamentally to make them last longer and perform better.
Amazing, amazing. So much to unpack there over the rest of the show. But before that, as with all of our guests, the hardest part, because we all are experts in our field, is being a DJ for a second. So you have chosen a song for our listeners this morning. What's your song choice and why have you picked it?
So I'm 55. I grew up in the 80s and 80s and 90s were kind of my music. I can still sing the lyrics to songs from 80s and 90s. As it gets a bit later on, I struggle a little bit. So my go-to band back in that era was Depeche Mode. So Depeche Mode, Just Can't Get Enough.
Oxfordshire Station, Get Radio.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. Following that great song chosen by Paul, we're going to be talking all about Glove Glue. And to do that, we're joined by Paul, the CEO and founder of Glove Glue. So for those just tuning in, talk to me about the story of how did Glove Glue come about? You mentioned that it was a side business originally, but what was the point that you decided to, do you know what, there's a market here. I want to set up this business.
Yeah, so it's a nice question, and I always like going back to this memory actually, because it really was a light bulb moment. And you know, the skeptics out there go, "Nah, there's no such thing. No, it doesn't happen. No." But that whole sort of light bulb, sliding doors moment. So I have had 30 years in sporting goods. So I, as a kid, loved sport, played county tennis and county athletics and every sports team at school, and always wanted to be involved in sport, and was lucky enough to make that happen back in the mid 90s or early 90s even. And have worked with lots of sports brands over the years. And back in 2011, my business then was basically representing predominantly European-based sporting goods manufacturers. I had a team of sales agents across the UK and Ireland, and we were the front-end sales and marketing operation for many different brands. McDavid, which was a sports medical support brand, did some projects with Adidas on a sports drink, Ironman with some insoles and some apparel. Spenco, which was again was another insole brand. And one of my clients was Allsport, and Allsport are one of the, they were back in the 70s, were one of the pioneers in goalkeeping gloves. Prior to that, some of your listeners might remember that goalkeepers back in the 50s, 60s didn't even wear gloves. So got to know the goalkeeping glove market really, really well by working with Allsport. And what I mean by that is not just the retail side of things, but also in terms of players, in terms of goalkeepers. So was working at the time with Premier League goalkeepers like Pepe Reina, who was at Liverpool, and Hugo Lloris, who was at Spurs, and Jussi Eskelinen was at Bolton, and many, many more. And as well as grassroots coaches and goalkeepers. And I used to sit on the Allsport International Product Development Board, and Allsport, like most of the other football goalkeeping glove brands, were constantly looking at innovating the palm of the goalkeeping glove to make them grippy. Now, all goalkeeping glove palms are made of latex. Latex is a natural material, and there's a little bit of a trade-off because if you spend £150, yes, gloves can cost over £150. If you spend £150 on a pair of goalkeeping gloves, the latex is super grippy, but one of the reasons it's grippy is because it's soft and therefore it wears quite quickly. If you spend £10, maybe you go to Sports Direct and buy a pair of Sondico gloves, for example, at the bottom end, entry level. Well, they're not very grippy, and the latex is very hard. So I was in the context of working with European brands in the business that I just was talking about. I also was working at the time with young entrepreneurs, entrepreneurs in and around the sporting goods industry in the UK with some ideas. And one of my clients was a guy called Glenn Robertson, and he had a goalkeeping training product called Response Ball. It was a football with bumps, basically. I had taken Glenn up to meet one of our core retail partners, and we were driving in the car back towards my house, having had a successful meeting with this retailer with Glenn's product. And we were spitballing ideas, and we were talking about this issue that I've just described about, well, if you spend a lot of money on goalkeeping gloves, then they wear away, and if you don't spend very much, and everybody's talking about the latest latex. And I can tell you, and this is no word of a lie, I can tell you exactly where I was, and your listeners will probably know it. It's a place called Wick Hill. It's between Stow-on-the-Wold and Burford. And we were at the bottom of Wick Hill, and I was driving, and I turned to Glenn, and I went, "I think I've got it." And he's like, "What? Got what?" And I'm like, "Everybody talks about innovating goalkeeper glove palms with the latex." I said, "Imagine if there was a product that you could apply to your palms." So, at the bottom end, these gloves that aren't very grippy for £10, maybe you could make them grippy by applying some to the palm. And at the top end, when those soft palms start to wear away and the grip goes, maybe we could sort of re-grip them. And that was it. That was 2011. And this idea just came into my head, and I knew no such product existed. And that was the start of the glove glue journey.
Amazing. What a nice story. What a nice story. So I'm going to take on to the next chapter if that's okay. So
Sure.
from that hill, and that conversation, how did you go about turning it into a product? Where what is that process from the idea to a product that's on the shelves and being sold?
So I knew a guy who had been in and around the sporting goods industry, in particular in and around the manufacture of football boots. He was a chemist by trade, and he had been working on various applications to football boots to do all sorts of things, prevent the mud from sticking, making them waterproof, and so on and so forth. So yeah, I knew he had chemistry knowledge and an understanding of sporting goods. So I went to this guy and said, "Look, here's my idea. What do you think?" So he's like, "Okay, yeah, I've got some ideas in and around this. Let me go away and do some work on this." And so I was lucky that I had a contact of some shape or form. I didn't know him particularly well. He was kind of a friend of a friend, but reached out to him. and started to get some samples back from him. And the samples that came back, they were sort of a milky white liquid, looked a little bit like milk, actually. A milky white liquid came back with varying degrees of stickiness, let's say. Started testing the product. So again, referring back to my relationships that I had with these professional goalkeepers, it was relatively easy for me to send product to pros and to coaches and to grassroots goalkeepers, and just use those contacts to start testing the product. And testing phase number one was, I don't know if you, I don't even know whether this thing is going to fly. I mean, how does it? The
Yeah,
principle sounds good. I'm going to apply something to my gloves,
absolutely.
right? But I don't know what happens if you do that. Does it damage the latex? Well, clearly we don't want to damage the latex. Does it? How long does it last? Does it work in the rain? How often do I touch a ball in a game? Maybe I've had a game and we've won 10-0 and I haven't touched the ball, or maybe we've lost 10-0 and I've touched the ball so many times that all these different scenarios. Anyway, after 8 months of testing, we finally have a product that is the right level of grippiness according to the cohort of testers, lasts the right amount of time, doesn't damage the product. This is fantastic. Ah, hang on a minute. We have one slight problem. This product that we've developed, that the chemist has produced, that we've tested for the last 8 months, now works. We've proven the concept. This product we have in front of us is highly flammable. So we have no opportunity, really. We do not want to be taking a highly flammable product to market. So it basically then took another probably 6 to 8 months of trying to get back to that point, but with a product that was non-flammable, was very friendly, was water-based, which latex likes, which gave us the ability to ship around the world. So that process alone, to go from idea to be in a position to we were ready to go to market, was, 12 pushing on 15 months probably by the time we'd gone backwards and forwards.
Wow, no, amazing. And I bet there were smiles and tears along the way.
Absolutely.
In terms of that, the product working is of course so key, but I think one of the things that I always think about your business is your marketing's good. It's got a great name, great marketing, and it's in line with that target audience. At what point did the name and the branding come, and what was that process of making it attractive, as well as working well?
So 2011 came with the idea. I like to think of myself as a marketeer, although probably it's more of a sales and marketing background as my career has evolved. I absolutely love the process of brand building and everything in and around that. So the concept of trying to come up with a name massively excited me. And I thought I'd cracked it, and I thought I was being super, super clever, and I had the working title of Keeper Grip, Keepa Grip, Keeper Grip, as in like goalkeeper, but also Keeper Grip. I thought, ah, it's genius. This is fantastic. And that was the working title for quite a long time. Until, and maybe this is another light bulb moment. I've never talked about this actually, but it was a waking up one morning, literally, with the word glove glue, and I thought, hang on a second, that's kind of way cooler. That's really nice. And I went out with one of my sales agents at the time that week, 2 or 3 days later. And I was talking to Dan, and I said, Dan, my sales guys obviously we're going out and selling All Sport and other products that we represented at the time, but they were aware of kind of this testing thing I was doing and this keeper grip project that I was working on. And I said to Dan, he said, "That's fantastic." He said, "Obviously you're going to drop the E off the end because that will make it sound really cool." And I'm like, "Yeah, now that is nice glove glue with no E on the end. So GLU, bit of personality, kind of goo." Pudding had been around for a while with his little umlaut on the GU, and that was kind of quite nice and gave a bit of interest. So it was a combination of me coming up with glove glue, Dan saying drop the E, that we then ended up with a brand name, of which, if you got time, I'll tell you a very quick story about the evolution of that as well. So glove glue, so we launched in 2012. Yes, fantastic brand name, amazing. Four products that make goalkeeper gloves grippy. We had a challenge for quite some time, and I had some COVID navel gazing that I concluded back in 2020. You know what? We should go into goalkeeping gloves, but I'm not sure whether goalkeeping gloves or apparel would be right to carry the glove glue name. And maybe I had some, I just had some reservations. It didn't feel right. Maybe the brand wasn't strong enough at the time. We hadn't been around long enough. So I launched this side brand called GG Lab, Glove Glue Lab. Absolutely bombed. Because actually, I didn't have the courage of my convictions. I should have actually been confident enough to say, do you know what? Yeah, glove glue can, of course. We're now in the goalkeeping community. Goalkeepers connect with the brand name. Why can't we put it on other products? And now we do. But, I'm not sure whether I would have got, if I reflect now, would I have chosen a different brand name, or is it that, or has this brand name given us the opportunity and has been a really, really strong part of creating the depth of interest that we have in and around our brand and our community? Probably has, but it works well for us. We have a social media following now of over a 1.2, 1.3 million across the globe. So something is resonating at product and at brand level.
Absolutely, absolutely. Paul, thank you so much for your thoughts so far. We'll continue the conversation after this.
Introducing you to local trusted experts. This is the Business Brunch. Sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network, the friendly, no-pressure networking group for Oxfordshire's business people. Sign up to our mailing list at obcn.co.uk.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. If you are just tuning in, we're talking all about glove glue. So those goalkeepers out there will be fascinated. But also, it's a business show, and I think there's a really great business and marketing story behind it. Paul, you spoke about the setting up of the product, the testing of the product, the marketing, which is your specialist area. And I'm really keen to really ask you the question about the point where you realized that this was going somewhere. You were going to have over a million followers. It's going to be all across the globe. It wasn't, I guess, the side business that it started as. What was that kind of pivotal point? Take yourself back there.
2019, glove glue. Then we our very first order came in June 2012. So by 2019, we'd been, for want of a better phrase, tickling along, as a side gig to my other interests. We were starting to get some traction, because I was working with multiple brands across Europe. I would invariably find myself somewhere in an international sales meeting held by said brand, sitting next to somebody from a different country who was representing that brand, having a conversation. What else are you up to? Oh, I'm working on this glove glue project. Oh, okay. I'm Juan from Spain. Why don't I distribute your product for you in Spain? Okay, Juan, that sounds like a good idea. Why don't we try that? And several conversations like that had meant that we were starting to gain some global traction because we had some global partners. Quite early doors, you know, countries like the US and a distributor in Japan and Benelux and so on and so forth. And it got to 2019, and two things were happening. One was the core business that I had. The business model was as follows: European brand based in, let's say, Germany, warehouse full of product. We would, as a sales and marketing front to that brand, go out and sell to sports shops across the UK and Ireland. We would do all the sales, all the marketing, we would do the customer care, we would do the credit control. The brand shipped the orders from, in this, let's say, Germany into the UK seamlessly and would invoice. We would do the rest. Suddenly, this B word came along. This Brexit thing was happening, and the seamless transfer of goods from Europe into the UK was now going to be a big challenge and a big headache. And our huge success in terms of being able to offer every single product that sat in that brand's warehouse, or those brands that we were working with, their warehouse, we wouldn't probably not going to be able to do that, because we probably would need to go back to a traditional distributor model, which typically means cherry picking the product range, cherry picking the winners, because as a distributor, you're investing heavily in stocks, warehousing, everything like that. We didn't have any of that. We didn't have any investment in stock. We didn't have to have any investment in warehousing, because we were basically the front end sales and marketing, and we were doing the hard graft at the front, not the back end operational stuff. So Brexit was looming. The other thing that was looming was that I was going to be 50 years old in 2020. And did I feel like I'd really achieved everything that I wanted to achieve? And did I feel like I had the ability to create a sports brand, something that probably I'd dreamed of since I was a kid, as I said, playing tennis at county level and athletics and doing all these sports? Wouldn't that be amazing? So I turned to my wife and said, I really would like to give this glove glue thing a proper go. What does that mean? Well, that means we probably need to remortgage the house. We need to raise some capital. I'm going to divest myself of these other business interests. I'm going to close that other business down. We're going to go fully in, 100%, roll the dice at 50 to grow this business. And amazingly, she supported me. And
Amazing.
that's what happened in 2019, late 2019. In January 2020, I came out of all of the other business interests. And we all know what happened in March 2020. Now, actually, again, on reflection, what happened in 2020 was really, really positive for us as a business. Because at that moment in time, the proposition, the business plan was I was going to take this grippy spray that we had for goalkeeper gloves and was going to roll it out into other sports. And we were going to go multi-sport. And on reflection, I realized actually, why would we do that? We're better off going really, really drilling deep into into the niche that we already had some traction in, which was the global football market. So COVID allowed me to reflect on that and go, no, actually, let's stay in football. And the other thing, as I mentioned, to grow this business, we were going to need some cash, because we were going to start to have to build some stocks and warehouse those stocks and have a production line and all of these other things that we didn't have before. And the government came along with a bounce back loan, and I had 50,000 that I was able to take as a bounce back loan, which HSBC some 2 months earlier had laughed me out of the bank, saying, well, there's no, why we're not going to, why would you give you any, why would we give you any money? And suddenly HSBC were sending me 50,000. And West Oxfordshire District Council also gave me £10,000 as a grant to help a struggling young small SME in West Oxfordshire during COVID. So actually, it gave me some additional oxygen, if you like, to allow us, and some working capital to allow us to really spend that time developing a much wider product range, so that when we came out of the back of COVID late 2020, we were ready to rock and roll. So we had some great oxygen to fuel that fire almost out of the gate. Okay, we had that little period, COVID period, but almost out of the gate to really, really give it a proper go. And since then, we have literally been in the classic rocket ship of growth.
Amazing, amazing. And in terms of for those who listen to the show, a lot of them, I imagine, love Dragon's Den. And one of the big things that always comes out in Dragon's Den is how do you protect it? What's the IP? What was that a factor with Glove Glue? And what was that kind of process?
Super tough, right? Because very, very difficult. Well, first of back in the day, even if we'd have wanted to do that, we didn't have the money to do that. We were, of course, we've protected our brand, our logo globally. So that was fine. To protect Glove Glue as a brand was fine. To protect the IP of the chemical formula actually is very difficult because the reality is, someone can potentially develop a new formula, take a formula, tweak a formula, so on and so forth. So the strategy right from day one was, okay, we need to build this thing quite quickly. We need to penetrate the global market quite quickly. We need to be first to market. We need to be in there. No one else has done this before. Let's be the innovator. Let's become the category king. Let's be the guys that have introduced this product and this product range to a global marketplace. We were able to do that relatively quickly, as I said, because I already had a lot of contacts, business to business contacts, in different parts of the world because of my other business interests that I'd had over the years. So that definitely helped. And still to this day, we take that approach that it really is about brand building. And interestingly, in the last 18 months, we've seen competitors come in into particularly into the grip spray space. We then just need, it is our responsibility to continue to be the innovators, to continue to do new things, to continue to bring new products to market that our competitors don't do so. So we were able to protect the brand, tick. We weren't able to protect the chemical formula. But the reality is, as I've already outlined, it took us 14, 15 months to actually develop a formula. So we knew actually the barriers to entry at that stage were pretty high because basically what it meant is if anybody wants to come and do what we were doing, they're going to also take probably 12 to 15 months to develop a product. Even if they try to re-engineer our product, it still takes time to do that. So we had a
Absolutely.
bit of breathing space, and we just it was all about scale.
Amazing. Amazing. Thank you so much for your thoughts so far. Let's continue the conversation after this.
The Business Brunch Podcast with Ben Thompson, sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network. Discover our membership packages to help you grow your business at obcn.co.uk.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. If you are just tuning in, I definitely recommend heading over to the Get Radio website and listen back to the podcast version. Especially if you're interested in sport and business. It's been a really great story. So thank you, Paul, for your story so far. We've spoken a lot about getting to market. We've spoken about marketing. We've spoken about that really brave move in terms of all in and let's scale it. If you were to I guess I've had a crystal ball then and looked at these 5 years. Has it gone to plan? Has it been what you expected? And what was your kind of vision there? And what's your vision for the future? Like what's the future of the business going to look like?
Yeah, so if I go back 2020, we talked about COVID. We talked about my key objective then was to go wide and deep in goalkeeping and try and, as I said, I'd come away from thinking about multi-sport, and it was going as deep as we can, as global as we can. That as a strategy, I think, was absolutely the right strategy at that moment in time. I think we were perhaps quite slow to recognize the Amazon opportunity, which is now a really interesting part of our business globally, in fact, because there were just so many eyeballs within Amazon. So maybe that was something that we could have moved a little bit quicker. We have tried very hard to push our direct to consumer business through gloveglue.com. And again, we could have perhaps done a better job at that, and we're in the process of completely reviewing that at this moment in time and pushing that forward. I'm being hypercritical here. It's still a really core part of our business, but I think we can do better, and doing better probably means localization And interestingly, our B2B continues to be strong. The exciting thing that's happened that I w hadn't seen was back in 2020, our core global customer base was very, very much football specialist retailers. What happened post-COVID was that a lot of the sports multiples around the world, so in the UK, people would know Sports Direct, they might know Decathlon, for example, but there are a lot of big retailers around the world of similar ilk that are selling generalist sports products across multiple sports. Many of those got their fingers burnt post-COVID. They'd seen this huge growth in business during COVID because we were all active and doing stuff and buying sports equipment and so on
Course.
and so forth. By 2021, they realized actually they were overstocked, and they realized actually the mix of their business was arguably too much in apparel and footwear, where and those categories are very very sensitive to changes in the marketplace and seasonality. Oh, it's we've had a really wet summer. Oh, we couldn't sell all of our summer apparel, for example. So they recognized actually in every single one of their categories, they needed to have deeper product ranges in accessories. Why? Because accessories don't really change very often. The intake margin is as good as the exit margin. They're not based on seasonality. There's no real change in product because, you know, it's the pink Ronaldo boot this week, and in 12 weeks' time, it's the yellow Ronaldo boot. Accessories don't have that. So it meant that a lot of the sports multiples globally were starting to look at accessory brands, and we are fundamentally an accessory brand. So a lot of the growth in the last 2 years, and definitely projecting forward for the next 3, 4, 5 years, is coming from these big box chains. And I'll use the example of Dick's Sporting Goods. Dick's Sporting Goods, one of the world's biggest retailers. They have sports retailers. They have 800 stores in the US, multiple sport. They're rolling out this house of sport concept. So think big stores, two stories, you know, nothing like we have over in the UK. And they're embracing and growing with us in a way that I would never have anticipated that we would potentially fit within a Dick's Sporting Goods. And we're seeing that with Rebel Sport down in Australia, for example. We're seeing that in Scandinavia with XXL and with Stadium. We're seeing it in Switzerland with Ochsner. And so the list goes on. And I think that fundamental shift in the global sporting goods marketplace in terms of sports multiples embracing accessories in a much deeper way than they had historically has definitely played into us. And of course, the other really interesting trend that I probably could have predicted, but maybe hadn't anticipated it would happen as quickly as it has, is the fact that our core customer is a goalkeeper. 15 years ago, we were probably only talking to male goalkeepers. Now, there's a massive cohort, particularly in certain markets around the world, of girls and women coming and playing football. So, arguably, our customer base in terms of the core consumer is now doubling because we're now selling to boys and girls, men and women, goalkeepers. So that's been really interesting as well, seeing that evolve. And you know, you've seen the success of the England football team and everything that's happening with women's football here. It's happening in other markets. It's always been strong in the US, which is a big market for us. It's always been strong in Sweden, Scandinavia, which is a big market for us. It's always been strong in Australia, a big market for us. So our markets where we're seeing explosive growth are also seeing explosive growth in football participation because they're seeing a load of girls and women coming into the sport. So couldn't have predicted any of that. Would it have changed our approach back in the day? Probably not. Have we made mistakes along the way? Absolutely. Every entrepreneur is going to make mistakes, and we embrace that within the business. We have a fail to learn culture in our business that my view is I empower all of the team members. You're going to make mistakes. You're going to fail. I'm not going to beat you up for that because the reality is you're going to learn from those mistakes. And so I think with that culture, that's also allowed us to really scale.
Absolutely. No, what a great story. What a great story. I'm keen to move away from your business while staying with your business. And really, I think one of the great things about the 250 something episodes of the show that we've had over the last 5 years is, I guess, a really great share and insight. And I think that if we were just to talk broadly, just about the business side, so let's forget that it's a great sporting product, but what would you say has been the biggest lesson that you've learned on the business side, and the biggest or the best decision you've made purely from a business side? What's your thoughts there?
I think there's a couple of things, and perhaps it's related to the same answer, really. I've grown up in and around athletes, in and around sport, and if you're at the top of your game, or even if you're at the top of the game, let's take a Djokovic for example, you're still going to have a coach. Now, that coach doesn't necessarily teach you how to improve your topspin forehand. That coach in a Djokovic scenario is actually on board to help you with the mental side of the game, and also help you with strategy, also help you understand your opposition, your competition. So I think, I started working with Paul Evans, who actually is based in Oxfordshire as a business coach about 4 or 5 years ago, for the reasons I've just outlined that an athlete would, that I think I'm an okay businessman, but are there some lessons that I can learn from other businesses, in and around those elements of strategy? Are there some shortcuts that actually I could probably work them out myself, the challenges that I've got, but maybe it takes me a year to do that, where actually someone's already been on that exactly that same journey and worked them out. So, and thirdly, as a solo entrepreneur, it can be lonely. It can be tough. Who do you turn to? My wife doesn't want me to turn around every night and talk about the business. There are certain things that you can't or don't want to talk to the senior management team about, and therefore, coaches give me accountability, and I think that's super important. It's someone that challenges me and says, "Oh, by the way, I'm going to do this." Okay, great. Well, I'm going to call you in a month's time to make sure you have done that. So I think that as a that's been, in terms of something that has hugely helped me as a business builder. I think the in terms of the learning question, what have I learned? I think I'm still trying to work on this. And that is the ability to bring people on that buy into the same goals, buy into the same dream, buy into the same aspirations, and also, more importantly, fill the gaps where I'm not quite so strong. I think it's Richard Branson that says, he's always where all the areas where he's historically been weak, he's always made sure that he's employed very, very good people to fill those gaps. I think he would probably, tongue in cheek, say, yeah, to sort of, to sort of hide behind my dyslexia or whatever, to hide behind the fact that I'm not great. I could never read a balance sheet and all these sorts of things. I might have been a bit slow to do that in terms of really letting go, but I think now I have a senior leadership team in place. That's the exciting part for me, is that I've got a head of brand, a head of ops, and actually a fractional CFO. And between the four of us, we now have a really, really clear 3-year plan to take the business to a super exciting point that potentially gives me, as the brand owner, all sorts of options. But I think we have that clarity now. We have that leadership team. So there's some lessons that could we have done it earlier? Maybe, maybe not. It's difficult sometimes to look back and reflect, particularly when you've seen, as we've seen, this crazy, crazy growth in the last 3 or 4 years. It's a great question, Ben, and nice to reflect on, actually. Do you know what? It's probably one that I will take away after this interview and think on some more.
Amazing, amazing. It's really interesting you touch on that aspiration piece. So I've ran a recruitment business for 12 years here in Oxfordshire, and in my view, the single biggest reason that a recruitment hire will be unsuccessful is because of misaligned aspirations. Single biggest reason. And I think that the moment that businesses don't discuss aspiration, and it's too late. So I would really, really encourage anyone listening to really think about the aspirations of your people right from the point of recruitment to the point of working for a business for 20 years. We are coming to the very, very final segment of the show, so I've got one last question for you. And I feel like a bit of a fraud asking you this, Paul, because you've been sharing top tips throughout the whole show, including that coach piece just there. So you can absolutely reiterate a point, or you can give something new. But as a lasting tip for the Oxfordshire business owner listening to this show right now, if you could give one tip, what would be that lasting tip?
I think it's tip slash advice. Anybody that tells you building a business is easy is a liar. If you have the mindset, and the mindset I have is, if you are faced with problems in your business, then approach them as logical problem solving. There is always going to be a solution. You know, I see business owners panic and oh the business is going to close. Oh this is the, oh I can't believe this has happened. Oh this is the, what am I idea? I think you know to calmly reflect on what actually is that issue, and there was, as I said, there was always going to be a problem. Bring in other people to help you solve that problem should you need to, whoever that may be, people, and often yeah, talk about coach, fine, but I'm sure most of your listeners, if they're building businesses, have got friends that are perhaps, they might be in a completely different business, a completely different industry, but they might have a nugget where they're removed enough to see this problem in a completely different light than you see. It's very easy to get caught up in the minutiae and the detail and be totally in it. And often I've had a conversation, it might be with my brother, for example. Oh, how are things? Da, da, yeah, I'm wrestling with this something. And what have you thought of this? And and actually, then it potentially could be blindingly obvious. Obvious, but don't know whether that's a, as I said, there's been plenty of tips through this, but I think that for me is I try and any issues that come up, and of course they come up on a regular basis, as they do with any business. For me, that's like. Actually, I've turned it on its head. That's now the exciting part of building the businesses. Actually, business would be pretty boring if we didn't have some challenges and some issues, right? It'd be pretty, you know, we joke. Business, our business would be amazing if we didn't have customers and suppliers. Of course, we wouldn't have a business, right? But yeah, it's I'm enjoying that that problem solving and that learning.
Amazing, amazing. Well, no, thank you. Thank you so much for sharing your insight, expertise, and your story, which is a really exciting one, especially as myself, who've played in golf for years and years and years, albeit very badly. But that is the end of the show. So if you are just tuning in, we've been joined by Paul Sherratt, of Glove Glue, wonderful local business that's making a great impact globally. So I definitely, definitely recommend heading over to the website, heading over to their socials, and follow undoubtedly an exciting story over the coming years as well. Just a reminder, you can listen to this radio show every Sunday on the radio or online at 11 a.m. There's also a podcast version, which is available on every major podcast platform and goes out on the Monday morning. And do look out for the video format, which goes out on the Get Radio Facebook page and their website every Tuesday. We are going to be back next week with some brand new guests. And next week, we're going to be talking about finance for business owners. To do that, we're joined by three local experts. So Chris Morris of NGI Finance, Nick Longford of DSA Prospect, and George Waggerfield of Matthews Comfort. So three great local experts there. And finally, thank you from me, thank you from Paul, and thank you to Paul. And thank you to you, the listeners, for listening in every week. And we'll see you next week. Enjoy.